Hollywood is full of interesting stories, and it seems Hollywood history is constantly being revised and updated. A new documentary looks at the fascinating story of small actors and stuntmen and how a community of little people found empowerment and acceptance by using their comedic talents and athletic skills off-screen. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The new documentary titled The Hollywood Shorties will receive its premiere this month at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas. And joining me to discuss the history of the smallest professional basketball and baseball team in the world, I'm happy to have back on the program Ryan Stephen Green, writer, producer, and director of The Hollywood Shorties. Good morning.
Good morning, Charles. Thanks so much for having me again.
I'll note that you're joining us by phone from L.A., but soon you'll be in Austin for your big premiere of your film. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm beside myself with joy on this one, so pretty excited.
It is a joyous film. It's quite uplifting, I have to say, watching the story of perseverance and these amazing characters at the heart of it. I want to back up, though, and I read a lot about Hollywood and the creative community that built up around Southern California to make movies, but even I wasn't aware of this little group, the Hollywood Shorties. I'm amazed by how many more stories there are to discover. How did you come across this history?
It's a family story for me, believe it or not.
The best
I've known
kind.
Of the Shorties since I was a child. My uncle Larry was on the team from the early 70s up until the late 80s. My other uncle, Scott, whose average height, promoted the team in the early 80s and also refereed. And so because of that, I've known of them. There's a photo that appears in the film that maybe you've seen online as well of the Shorties with the Laker girls. And that's a photo that just circulated in my family. It was up in my dad's classroom. He was a middle school teacher in public schools for 36 years. And that photo of the Shorties with the Laker girls was always in his classroom, and he would tell the story. And so it was just part of the sort of family lore in my childhood.
Fascinating. And you know, one of the things I took away from the film, which has a lot of different perspectives on it, but when we're talking about the American dwarf community, at least in the last century, there were so few opportunities for most of the country to see them, if not in a circus. Really, film and television was the main outlet where they could be at least seen, oftentimes in strange costumes or playing small creatures or things in films.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, to see a little person's actual face is like a precious opportunity in film and TV. And I sort of exploit that idea as far as I could in the Shorties film. Because it was mostly costume work. And, you know, another part of the personal side of the Hollywood Shorties story for me is my Uncle Larry, who was on the team, also worked in Hollywood. And so, you know, like a lot of members of the team, he was an Ewok in Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I come to find out, stole his Ewok mask. I was told, of course, at the time when I was a child, that he was given as a parting gift his Ewok mask. But he had it around the house, and so when I would go over, I would, you know, put on the Ewok mask and be running around the house in that. And so I didn't realize kind of what a metaphor that was for my Uncle Larry and his involvement in the film industry, but really that was kind of par for the course for all the guys. A couple of them, including my Uncle Larry, were in the Garbage Pail Kids movie, again in masks, but very oversized masks. I mean, heads almost as big as their bodies. You know, they were bulldog guards in Mom and Dad Save the World. They were in, you know, Space Invader. I mean, it's always another alien. It's always another teddy bear. It's always another elf. You know, it's always some
leprechaun.
Little creature. Leprechauns. Oh my gosh, leprechauns coming out the ears, you know. It's always these things. And I think there was a, particularly in the 70s and 80s, when the Hollywood Shorties were kind of at their peak, this phenomenon also, I think, was at its peak, because you don't see a lot of it post, like, Space Invaders, actually, early 90s, and you don't see a lot of it pre, sort of, mid-70s. I think maybe in the 70s, the big production for them was Under the Rainbow.
Right, about the making of The Wizard of Oz.
Exactly, they reprised the Munchkins role, and that was actually in 1980 or 81. That wasn't that wasn't in the 70s, but that was a big time like draw in terms of extending the Southern California dwarf community. I mean, it brought even more people in, if only temporarily, to be in that film.
What's fascinating, too, in the film is you have this wonderful graphic of the United States in which you chart the location of the majority of dwarves in America in the last century, and there's this enormous cluster right around Los Angeles, presumably because of the film industry and the opportunities there, but it also created this very unique community where little people could hang out with other little people, which for many of them, listening to their stories of growing up elsewhere, was really a transformative time and place for them.
Totally. I think I take it for granted because I grew up in Southern California as well. I was familiar with the LPA from a young age for that reason, LPA being Little People of America, the national organization for little people. But yeah, as you said, the social scene here was rich for them. You know, they worked together in the film industry. They met together socially. They attended the LPA. There's not just national conventions, but there's regional, there's, you know, local meetups constantly happening throughout the year in the LPA.
Several of your interviewees really make the point that when the Hollywood Shorties got together in the late 40s originally to start playing charity games, I guess back then it would have been softball, but for a lot of the audience to those games, it may have been the first time they'd seen more than one dwarf in one place.
Yeah, even to this day, it's a very unique sight, I guess, to see even a single little person out in public. Mm-hmm. But to see, yeah, a big group of them, you know, rarely if ever happens for most people. So yeah, the Shorties definitely opened eyeballs whenever they would show up. One soundbite that I did not include in the film, but is rather humorous, I guess, is Glenn Hazarot, the coach of the Shorties from about 1986 to 1994, states that when they would go traveling, they would go on these kind of like barnstorming tours, and you know, they'd be walking through the airport or wherever they were, and he would be called Snow White because he was traveling with the seven dwarves and the sort of the attention that that situation would cause.
So how did the idea, though, of moving beyond, say, the LPA, the Little People of America, and creating opportunities for networking within that community evolve into athletics?
I think, you know, it starts with the person of Billy Barty going back to his college days, and probably even before that, he was involved in athletics. He lettered in football and basketball at LA City College. And my best guess is that that gave him a taste for, hey, there's more to do here. And because he was a ringleader and because he had connections in Hollywood and he was extremely gregarious and just kind of idea oriented, Billy Barty throughout his whole life sort of just started stuff, a new idea here, a new idea, just get it going, you know?
And probably in America, the most well-known little person in film at that time.
Certainly at his time, yeah. And I think the Hollywood Shorties just grew out of that. And as you say, it began really simply and sporadically, too. The record in the 50s, when they were really starting to get going, and even in the 60s, is very sporadic. You know, there's just a handful of articles that appear. There's very, very few photographs. It was something that they did recreationally, but each time they did it, it was for a charity or, you know, it brought in a cause in addition to the show that they put on, essentially.
Did these guys see themselves as ambassadors of a sort and trying to really prove something that culturally people saw their condition as being one of a medical condition, and they were showing people that they were vibrant, athletic, physical beings?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not stated explicitly in the film, but pretty much any and all of the Shorties said it at one point in the interview that this was about showing we're the same as you. We can do everything that you can do. We're just shorter. That's it. And that was very much a part of the Shorties' message to the average height world, sometimes more subtle and sometimes very explicitly, depending on the context.
And they were quite athletically gifted. I mean, they nailed a lot of three-pointers in their day and were very good ball handlers. But obviously part of what the attraction was they were, a lot of them, out of the entertainment industry, and they spent a lot of time entertaining crowds too.
Yeah, and it's funny kind of reading through the publicity materials that they themselves created during their career. They very much highlighted their role in Hollywood. You know, whoever had just starred in Laverne and Shirley, whoever had just made an appearance in the Mike Hammer Show or whatever, like that was very much put at the top of whatever publicity materials were going out to, you know, play the faculty of Banning High School or whatever. It's a weird relationship they had to Hollywood because, you know, as we've commented on, they were kind of stuck in these very typecast costume roles. But at the same time, it provided a living. You know, I mean, it was money. It was bread on the table. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. And also in their publicity, it helped them to get more traction as the Hollywood Shorties team, you know, because that brought the Hollywood angle to the whole thing.
As the Shorties progressed in their career, and you mentioned the Laker girls and some really big gigs they got with the NBA late in their career. I gather around that time, though, there was a growing tension within the group over those who really wanted to be straight-up athletes versus performers, entertainers, who happened to also be athletic, and that tension began to pull some of the group apart.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the main conflict of the film. I think that what was really happening was the society as a whole was changing, and particularly the LPA and the dwarf community in the United States. Guys were tired of just being the comedy, the one-off, the gag, the costume, you know, the very thing that most of the American public was so used to seeing them as. And they wanted to be taken more seriously, and they saw an opportunity to be taken more seriously in the context of dwarf athletics, because what was happening in the mid-80s was the emergence of a new organization for little people called the DAAA, the Dwarf Athletic Association of America, whose goal was to just provide opportunity for dwarves to compete against dwarves on a level playing field, as they say. And this concept was very attractive to a constituency of the Shorties, but very attractive to dwarves all over the United States, and the DAAA just took off. I mean, today it's, you know, they have their annual games, and
it's like the Olympics, right?
It is like the Olympics for little people. It is exactly that, yeah.
And of course, the Hollywood Shorties, if not directly inspiring that, created the environment in which it grew out of.
This was news to me, by the way, that portion of the story. I had no idea about that going into the film.
What has it meant to a lot of these interviewees? Some of them are getting on in age that there's a film now that tells their story.
You would have to ask them that, but what I can say is that I met with no resistance to set up interviews with these guys. And in interviewing them, I mean, you can see it in the film, that the memories are so fresh. It's as if it just happened. This was a highlight of their entire lives. I mean, you have to think, they're in their 20s, you know, they're living in Hollywood, like they're having the time of their lives. And to do it in such a, as you said, joyous, but also such a unique way. I mean, there was nothing else in the United States, certainly, but probably in the world, like the Hollywood Shorties. And here they are, and they're doing it, and they're having a blast, you know. I mean, and that is totally reflected in the way that they talk about it, even to this day.
It certainly comes through in the film. And again, one of the uplifting parts of it is just watching these guys relive those glory days and what they were able to achieve. So congratulations on the film selection for South by Southwest Film Festival down in Austin. I really wish you the best of luck with its rollout.
Thank you so much, Charles. Yeah.
My guest today has been Ryan Stephen Green, writer, producer, and director of the new documentary, The Hollywood Shorties. The film tells the fascinating story of the smallest professional basketball and baseball team in the world, a group made up of little people, most of whom worked as actors and stuntmen in Hollywood while playing exhibition sports games for charity. The Hollywood Shorties captures a unique slice of Hollywood history and is a heartwarming tale of camaraderie and athletic competition among the dwarf community. The Hollywood Shorties will debut at the upcoming South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas, and you can see a trailer for the film and learn more about the real Hollywood Shorties at HollywoodShorties.com. On Film's producers, Norma Martinez, thanks to Mike Tipton today for engineering the show. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.